I am Plante on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Eve Joseph joins me again. The distinguished poet will be appearing this week at two events for the Vancouver Writers' Fest. Her most recent poetry collection, Quarrels, was shortlisted for the Dorothy Livesey Poetry Prize at the BC Book Prizes this past spring. Soon after, the book was the recipient of the Griffin Poetry Prize. We'll discuss the prose poems in the book, writing poetry, as well as her other writing. She was first on the program in 2014 when her memoir, In the Slender Margin, was published. It went on to win the BC Book Prize for Nonfiction, as well as many good notices. It is one of the more useful and elegant meditations on death and dying, as well as mourning and memory. Eve's two other books of poetry, The Startled Heart and The Secret Signature of Things, were also nominated for the Dorothy Livesey Award. The two events you can see Eve at this week are the Poetry Bash at Granville Island's Performance Works. That's Friday night at 8 p.m. And Poets Talking, an event at the Waterfront Theatre Sunday afternoon at 2. Visit writersfest.bc.ca for tickets. Quarrels is published by Anvil Press. Please welcome back to the Plante Online program, Eve Joseph. Ms. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Nice to talk to you again.
And you too. The last time we talked, we were talking about ghosts.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Actually, the last time we saw each other was, well, you came to the house about 5 years ago when the last book came out, and then I saw you earlier this spring at the BC Book Prizes.
Right.
Chatted very briefly, and so it's nice to sit down and talk to you again.
Yeah, you too.
A lot has happened in the last 5 years, though, for you, hasn't it?
It has. It definitely has. This was a big surprise for me. It sort of came out of left field in terms of the book being nominated for the Griffin and then winning it.
See, I've always known of you as a poet. And so it didn't really surprise me, if you will, that this book has done as well as it has. But I haven't read your first two books. Are they dissimilar to the way that this book is written, say?
Oh, they're all very different. One of the things that I think that is really fundamental to me with my poetry is form. So the first book came out, quite a while ago, in 2004, was a book of guzzles, Persian form, moved by couplets, by association. And then the second book was more what we think of as traditionally free verse.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one is prose poems. It's prose poetry, and that form I've been a little bit obsessed with, I guess, for a number of years.
And so why does it change, say, from time to time?
Oh, that's a great question. Because something changes, but something else doesn't. So what I mean by that is I think that artists, writers, I'll say, have lots of subjects, but very few themes. And so even though the form has changed, you're from guzzle to free verse, then nonfiction, and then now prose poetry. My themes are still. I think I still circle the same kinds of themes.
And where do the themes come from? Is that when you're at a certain place in your life or certain things happen to you that's what say inspires those themes? Maybe.
I think it's I don't know for other people. I can only speak for myself. I think that. One of the things that I'm really curious about is the relationship between the real and the unreal, between how, if we scratch the surface of our lives, we often find, strange stories, strange experiences. I trace it in some ways back to growing up in a home with a mom who was eccentric, who I grew up in North Vancouver. Uh-huh. It's just mom and I. And the line between what was real and what wasn't, between truth and fiction, was always blurred in our house. And so, when I found the prose poem with its sort of, sideways, surreal glance at the world, it felt like a familiar form that I could be released into to exploring some of this stuff.
Yeah, some of the poems as I was reading them, they seemed strange. Or they seem, the word you used, surreal, a moment ago, I think is appropriate. Then as I reread some of them recently, I realized they seem like dreams. This is how we dream, you know, when we have a dream at night, it's never, you know, literal. It often goes, you know, upside down, or it goes sideways, if you will.
There's a wonderful quote by Alice Oswald, a British poet, and she says that poems like dreams have an invisible and a visible subject, and the invisible subject chooses itself. We don't choose it.
Mm.
So you're right. They are dreamlike, but they, you know, in the way that we, you know, with our dreams, they come out of something real. You know, they come out of whatever we're gnawing at or circling or working at, right?
Yeah.
But they come out in strange form, in symbol, in metaphor, as opposed to a straight telling. And that's very much what these poems are like. So, for example, there's a poem in there that starts out, you know, the capon exploded out of the pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And, you know, that comes out of, you know, growing up with my mom. She was a hairdresser. Well, we were actually quite poor. My dad left the family when I was five, and so she would go out and hairdress, and she'd leave a meal on in a pressure cooker during the day, so that it was warm when I came home from school and she came home from work.
Yeah.
And one day, you know, it did. Literally, the chicken, you know, exploded out of the pressure cooker, and of course, it didn't. You know, go through the kitchen ceiling, but that's where it goes in the poem.
Yeah.
And there's different truths that we can reach through, you know, just through the strange things that happen in our lives.
And so that was a situation that happened in your life. So some of the other moments in the book that you write about, I mean, as I said, they seem dreamlike. Did they appear to you in dreams, maybe?
No. They appeared, you know, they came to me really from, you know, a lot of them from the glimmer of a real experience. So they weren't made up. I think that's something that's important. You know, that they're not just nonsense poems that, you know, you can think, oh, I'll just make up some nonsense. You know, they definitely, all of them, you know, come out of something that's real. I just finished reading, and this struck me. I just finished reading Days by Moonlight by Andre Alexis.
Uh-huh.
And in it, he said it's not a work of realism. It's not a work that uses the imagination to show the real, but one that uses the real to show the imagination.
Yeah. And you know, it's just such a beautiful way of looking at life, but so few of us actually think like that.
Yeah. The prose poem is liberating for me in that way. You know, I absolutely love the surprise of it. It, you know, often a good prose poem makes me laugh out loud. I never know what to expect in that place. And there's a newness to me. There's a, you know, I think everyone searches in their own writing or wants to, you know, find the voice that's current in them, that's alive, and prose poetry accesses that voice for me. It feels like,
yeah,
it feels unpredictable. It feels fresh. It's those things that I'm really drawn to.
Now, when you're writing a poem, it feels unpredictable and fresh. But does it feel like work?
Oh, it's it's crazy. You know, it's the hardest form I've ever worked in, Joe.
Mm.
And people sort of raise their eyebrows, you know, if I say that. It looks like a paragraph. It looks like a text from, you know, a novel or a piece of nonfiction. It just looks like a square little window. But it is enormously hard for me anyway to make that poetry and not just prose.
Yeah.
So, you know, a prose poem, you know, Charles Simich says, you know, it's the place where poetry and prose collides. And there's all kinds of things, you know, that you play with in terms of trying to, you know, have tension within that poem, you know, not have it be narrative. You know, I worked at, you know, just letting just letting images sit beside each other and resonate with each other and tell a story in that way, as opposed to, you know, once upon a time kind of story.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when does it feel finished then, when you're writing a poem?
You know, very rarely I know it's done. You know, I looked at some poems last night that I'm working on, and I thought, you know, I thought a couple were there, and I realized they're, you know, I have to take them apart again. I really struggle with writing. It does not come easily in terms of this form. And I was thinking too, I had a, you know, this, when I saw you and we talked about In the Slender Margin, which was nonfiction, that came just at the end of, you know, I was editing that book when I had a stroke. And that was 2013.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, I wasn't sure that, you know, after that stroke, I wasn't sure that I could write poetry again. And so something really shifted in me. And what shifted is that it felt like the spark. And you know, language is so vital and key, of course, in poetry. And you have to have that spark. You have to have that, you know, whatever that energy is in a poem. And it felt like I would strike a flint and nothing would take, nothing would happen. The image that came to me the other morning, you know, waking up and thinking about this, was that the prose poem, you know, picture it. It's like this little square thing. It was like a fire pit for me, and I'd throw in dry twigs, and I'd throw in paper, and I'd throw in, you know, whatever from my past or my future, you know, just the future, mm-hmm. whatever. I'd throw bits in, and I'd see what would take. It was like a little tinderbox, a little perfect little place to try. It was safely contained for me to try and come back. There is a way of coming back.
And so what else helped coming back? I mean, I'm off, because it's work, so it's physical and mental. I would think it's a little bit more mental than physical, but I mean, I've talked to writers over the years.
Oh, it's both.
Yeah, who's, you know, it can be in equal measure, but one more than the other. What recharges you? When things might not work, what helps in terms of getting you back on track, say?
Always reading other poets.
Mm.
You know, finding other poets that write in the same form right now. You know, I would go to bookstores and flip through books looking for square text as opposed to line verse. It's like I'm just hungry for that, for whatever the, you know, whatever mind was writing those things. And I found some wonderful poets. So, you know, I encountered a Danish poet, René Carsten Nielsen, whose work I love, and David Keplinger and Charles Simic. You know, all the way back to, you know, I started, you know, studying or reading, you know, falling in love with the French prose poets in the 18, you know, Baudelaire and Rimbaud and Aloysius Bertrand. You know, seeing how they broke with form. They broke with, you know, they were very confined by the Alexandrine line.
Uh-huh.
With its requirements, and these poets broke with that, and what fuels me is finding is not so much my own work. I'm so happy when I can break through myself, because I find that my biggest boundary is the boundary of myself. You know, continually trying to break through that.
Yeah.
But what fuels me is reading good work, mm. finding good work, and part of that is encountering wonderful poetic thinking. It just it excites me.
And so you'll be in Vancouver shortly, at least two events for the Writers Fest, and you'll be on stage with poets, your fellow poets.
Yeah.
That must be fun as well in terms of and obviously a chance to learn from your.
Absolutely. It's and it changes when you hear, you know, you can encounter a poet on the page,
mm.
but when you hear them read, when you hear someone else, you know, read, it can really change your perception. It can bring it alive in new ways. So that's marvelous.
Yeah. I want to talk about the cover, because when I first heard the title of the book, Quarrels, you know, I thought of argument, but then at the same time, I just thought it was a quarrel is a certain bird, and you've used the word as a group of birds, if you will. And I didn't really look at the cover because, you know, most of the time nowadays you get books before they're published, and so they don't have a cover.
Right.
And so when the book is finished, I didn't really look at it either. And sure enough, there's a bird on the cover of your book.
Well, it's kind of a bird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bird-headed girl stomping on the city.
Right.
And that, you know, I'm so happy with that cover. I think it's, you know, it's a perfect blending, if you will, of text and image.
Yeah.
And how that came about is my husband, Patrick Friesen, his daughter, Marijke Friesen, in Toronto, is a book designer. So I sent her, you know, a manuscript of these, you know, strange pieces, and she sent back seven, you know, mock-ups, and, you know, this was the only one that stood out to me. It was strange. It makes, you know, it makes no sense, really. You can't make logical sense of it, but it's delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a prose poem is for me, Joe. It's just, if it's delightful, if it delights me, I don't care about meaning. I care about the language that would bring me to a place of utter delight, almost disbelief.
And so you didn't give her direction as to
no,
what?
No, nothing.
Yeah, because it captures the book so perfectly.
She's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And she just did a brilliant job.
So the second section of the book, I reread it a few weeks ago, because I just come back from New York. And would you tell us what that section's about, say?
Yeah, the second section, interesting you say New York, because what happened was the book is divided into three sections.
Right.
The first are the more sort of surreal poems. The second section is a series of ekphrastic poems based on the photographs of Diane Arbus. And the third section is an elegy to my father. So I had started working on the book, and Patrick and I went to New York a few years ago, and there was a retrospective of Diane Arbus's work, so at the Met Brewer, so we went there, and I can't even describe the feeling, Joe.
Yeah.
You're walking into this gallery, and what I saw two things. I saw the photographs, but I immediately saw them as prose poems.
Mm.
They're just so perfectly contained prose poems, Diane Arbus's work,
So do you sit there in the gallery and start writing down stuff?
I did. I started sketch. I took notes.
Yeah.
I took notes. You know, there's the one with the, you know, the boys from the, you know, the Monster Club, and, you know, just looking at those, you know. It would have been nice, you know, in retrospect, and I've talked, you know, Anvil and I have talked about it, it would have been nice had we thought to put in the photographs.
Sure,
because in some ways it's a section of the book that's gone quiet because I don't read them. I had reading where they were, you know, projected on a screen, and that was wonderful to be able to read to them.
Yeah.
But I think they really need you to have the image up and then read the poem.
Yeah, so people can...
I learned from that, yeah.
This is what I did. I know who Arbus is, but then, you know, I kind of forget, you know, what her work looks like. So
right.
You Google her, and
yeah.
you look at the image search, and
right.
you read along, if you will.
Yeah, and she, you know, her work is, you know, they talk about her, you know, having, you know, in the 50s, you know, just been attracted to the outsider, to, you know, what, you know, people who were, you know, not seen as part of society, and, you know, but her eye is so compassionate. It's so human. Yeah, I just really love her work.
And that's the thing about rereading it again, because I just come back from New York a couple weeks ago. It's a city that's fascinated me long before I went to it. Like, as a kid, you know, you'd see it on TV or watch it in movies or you'd read about it. And so now I've been there three times in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I am still fascinated with it. I can't get it out of my
too.
System, you know?
Me too. We were there last fall. We walked it. First time we'd been there in the fall, and we walked through Central Park. We just spent... You know, Angels in America, there's that
fountain. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we found the fountain. You know, yeah. It just, there's all those iconic moments, you know. Yeah, I love New York.
Yeah, it's even like I went to go see a taping of Colbert.
And, oh,
and you walk into the Ed Sullivan Theater, and it's a, you know, I mean, you remember the Beatles even. I'm not old enough to remember the Beatles, but, you know.
I am.
And, you know, the Letterman was there for years. It's almost like going to a church, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I can see the street it's on. I know where that is, yeah. Yeah,
What do you least enjoy about writing?
Oh, that's a question. Oh, the... What I least enjoy is what's essential about it, and that's the places of doubt that I go to, where it really feels like, as I said, you know, I can strike and strike and strike something and nothing, you know, there's no spark, and sometimes that feels, oh, this sounds melodramatic, sometimes that feels like despair.
Yeah. I ask that because I think of the last book, in the Slender Margin, and I think of this book, and I can't help but read you and see, you know, not just words, but I can see some obviously humor, thoughtfulness. I can see wisdom, if you will.
Yeah, that's a too big a word.
But I'm, you know...
You know what it is? It's life experience, I think.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I do.
But then you must get readers coming up to you and say that they got something out of it that's useful, if you will.
Or just that, you know what, I would, if someone comes up to me and it's just been a pleasure, that's just lovely. Yeah. That I make no bigger claim than hoping that someone might get pleasure out of some of these pieces.
So the third section of the book is about your father. And I can't help but think that there's obviously some wisdom there. There are obviously memories, the feelings for you that are in those poems.
Yeah. Those poems, interestingly, you know, as I mentioned, you know, my dad was, I didn't grow up with him.
Uh-huh.
But we saw each other. We were very, very different. And he had three marriages, two more after my mom, and three more kids, so four of us. And when he lived in California, and when he was dying, he asked all his kids to be with him. Sister lives in California, three of us live in Canada, and I think he asked us to come because he knew he was on dialysis, he wanted to come off dialysis. And he knew that we could be there and help him with that, and whereas, you know, his partner might not be able to. It was too hard. But he knew we could, and I am so grateful that the poems and the elegy, you know, come out of 10 days that we were with Dad. And they're the most incredible 10 days that I'd ever had with him. Yeah. They're wonderful.
Yeah, and again, you because of a job that you had previously, you know what the end of a life looks like.
Yeah. So I worked at hospice for 21 years.
Yeah, and so you were able to bring those skills to bear, I'm sure.
I was, and so, you know, it's really weird to be seen as, in quotes, the expert, because I'm also a daughter, and you're never an expert with this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I did have a confidence, you know, and a language, and an ability to translate what was happening in front of us.
Right.
And all of those, all of that, Joe, all of those things about translation and, you know, interpretation and language, that came out of working with the dying, they're all part of poetry.
Mm.
You know, that's what thrills me. You know, too.
Yeah. Are you working on another book now, another collection, say?
I'm working on poems. You know, I don't know what that will turn into. You know,
sure.
I have not looked this, you know, far ahead enough to see it as a collection.
See, that's the other thing that I think might fascinate listeners. It interests me as well, because when I interview poets, it's usually because a collection is out now.
Right.
But as I read at the back of the book, Quarrels, some of these pieces have appeared elsewhere. And so I guess that's what one, as a poet, has to do. You publish in magazines and collections elsewhere, and then you put it together after a while.
They go on a little forays. They scout out into the world and come back to you.
Back to the memoir for a second, The Slender Margin. I mean, I've been, over the last 5 years, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've recommended it to people who've lost loved ones. Is writing a book, a piece of nonfiction, a memoir, if you will, is that something that you're thinking of again?
I would so love to, but I would so love to. I love prose. I love the, you know, poetic thinking, again, line by line. And as Didion said, she shouldn't know what she thought until she wrote. She wrote to discover what she thought, and that's what nonfiction is for me as well. But I have not found my way into another piece of nonfiction. Not at this point. I hope to.
Yeah. That book did very well, too, didn't it?
Yeah, it did well. Yeah. It did well.
Yeah. And as I said, I got a lot out of it, and people I've recommended to found it useful.
That's great.
Yeah. It's
great because it was not meant to be useful in terms of how-to or...
Sure.
It was more... And this really intrigues me. The deeper I immersed myself in my own thought about what those years of hospice had been, about, you know, my brother's death when I was young, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't... At that point, I wasn't writing for an audience. I was writing, you know, literally as a discovery for myself. And it almost surprises me that other people relate to that. Yeah. I was not trying to figure out ways to inform people about death. I was just talking about what I'd experienced.
Yeah. That's life too, isn't it? It's just gathering experiences from others and seeing what works for yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so nice talking again. I enjoyed seeing you back in the spring at the dinner. And
really nice talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and urge people to seek out the two events at the Writers Fest and see you and your fellow poets there.
Great. Thanks, Joe. It's just such a pleasure.
The book is called Quarrels. It is published by Anvil Press. Eve Joseph joined me on the line from Victoria. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.